Well, we have three rows. They move from left to right so you can get in there, plant, harvest. It's thousands of plants at a time that you're growing in that space. You know, we've been at this 8 years. It was a slow go because we didn't take on capital. And, you know, if you look at one of our competitors that took on $57, $58 million, we could have sped it up, but we wouldn't have owned the company. Their ROI is putting this behind a church in the south side of Chicago or wherever it's going to go and keeping kids out of a gang.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor. Today's guest is Jake Savageau, founder of Farmbox Foods. Farmbox has created technology to grow food using vertical farming within, well, basically within shipping containers. In a world that's constrained by power, water, and space required to grow food and the impact of growing feed for livestock, Farmbox seems to have figured it out. The stats are amazing, but I'm going to hold off on getting into those until we get started. They're super cool. Jake, I'm psyched to talk about Farmbox. I'm glad you're on ProCo 360.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I gave a quick intro. You could probably expand on that a little. Why don't you do that, and then we'll dive in deeper.
Sure. Yeah. We started in 2017, and we built our first prototype. It was a vertical hydroponic farm. And a few years later, we did our gourmet mushroom farm. And we also have a fodder farm for livestock, horses, cattle. And we've gone through many iterations. We have a large manufacturer here that we partnered with in Colorado. That's kind of a 30,000 foot view on what we do.
Yeah. All right. So, and you make these hydroponic farms are essentially, I described them as big shipping containers. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, we use a 40-foot high cube reefer container. So it's insulated. It's a little bit taller than a regular container. It's 40 feet long.
Do they have to be custom made for you?
The containers come as is. We have prefab, like our dirty fab, where they cut the doors out, paint everything, put the floors in, and then they go to the manufacturer to get assembled.
Got it. So, all right, I even jumped in too fast. What's the problem you're solving here?
Sure. Well, we're a mission-driven company. We work with a lot of vertical markets that are in the private sector driven by profit, but also vertical markets, they don't care about an ROI. So we're essentially a decentralized food security company that is focused on feeding people and now animals with the fodder system.
But what's the problem you're solving?
Well, the problem is I think the food system is broken in many ways. You know, we're not trying to compete with traditional agriculture, but we're putting poison in the ground. We're shipping things, you know, very far from point A to point B. If you go on a military base or you look at any city, there's nothing but fast food. There's nothing but gas stations that have sugar. So we're trying to get decentralized food security to where it's needed anywhere in the world.
So the idea is that these containers can be placed in really relatively small areas and grow fresh food anywhere.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. So that's super cool. Now, the math, and listeners, this is what I was holding off from the intro, because I couldn't wait to talk about it. The math is astounding. One container is equivalent to roughly 3 acres of open land. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
And one container, which can, again, equal to 3 acres, only uses 3 to 5 gallons of water a day.
Correct. It varies a little bit depending on what you're growing. Some of our clients do things that take a little bit more water, but that's about average.
But that's like flushing the toilet 3 times or something, and you grow 3 acres worth of food every. Yeah, it's astounding.
Yeah, it is.
Why is the difference so great? Is it because like it's that much more efficient to put a few drops of water on a plant versus, sprinkle a whole field?
Yeah, with our VHF, that's the vertical hydroponic form. Yeah. We grow vertically. You can also do this horizontally. And so there's a lot of efficiencies in doing that in the space that you have. And it's 360 square feet, essentially in a container.
360 square growing feet. Is that how you define it?
On the ground level, but you're actually multiplying that by X if you're growing vertically.
So if you picture, say, bunches of lettuce growing and they're from ground to ceiling, how many are there vertically?
Well, we have three rows. They move from left to right so you can get in there, plant, harvest.
Oh, I see. Like aisles in between them.
Correct.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then, but how many things of lettuce are you going to get vertically to picture this?
So it depends on how many tubes are in each wall, but it's thousands of plants at a time that you're growing in that space.
Wow. At once.
Yes.
And do they grow faster in this space than they do in the ground?
They can. It also depends on what you're growing. There's some things that you can't really speed up, but a lot of things you definitely can, depending on the lighting, the nutrients, and what you're doing when you're harvesting.
All right. I'm going to get into a lot more of that, but excuse me. Can you make a note of that? I can take a drink here. All right. I'm going to get into a bunch more of the details, but I'm also curious, like, is there a power constraint? Is this like a regular extension cord, or what do you plug into this thing?
It's not quite an extension cord, but everything's pretty easy.
Is it 220 or what?
It's 150 amp single phase. And we've been through many iterations. So when we started, it was a little bit different, but now it's the power, the water is very easy. And we do this everywhere.
But I mean, could a truck, a flatbed drop one somewhere and you could hook it up using traditional services? How quickly?
Correct. Yeah. When we do our pre-construction and work with the client, we go through all the permitting requirements. We work with the power system that they have. Sometimes there's an upgrade, but it's not very much. And the water is pretty much
basically a hose.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's not, if you're only using 3 to 5 gallons a day, or maybe a little more, like there's not much to it, right?
Not much.
Wow. All right. Are you competing with traditional agriculture at all?
In a way, we're actually working with them because a lot of our clients are in traditional agriculture and use our products as a supplement, to what they're currently growing.
Really? So like somebody who's growing, whatever, radishes or fruits and vegetables, they'll be growing it on a traditional farm and they're buying FarmBox?
Correct.
Why?
A lot of our clients do the GMF, that's the gourmet mushroom farm.
Yeah.
That has the fastest ROI, can do about 400 pounds of gourmets a week.
Wow.
In that same space. It's set up like a lab. So we do have a lot of clients that are running small farms and running this because you can do it 365 days a year.
Wow.
And it's a supplemented income.
Are they going to convert? Do you see a lot of people, like, do you see that as a future where people convert from a traditional mushroom farm to just doing this?
Well, a traditional mushroom farm would be more set up for, buttonhead mushrooms.
Yeah.
And this is more specific for, different types of mushrooms.
The gourmet style, which would sell. If somebody's, growing 400 pounds a week, what are they selling that for? Typically a pound of gourmet mushrooms.
It's going to be somewhere between $6 to $30 a pound, depending on where they're growing in the world and what they're growing.
So $10,000 a week, they're generating in gross sales.
Correct.
On a $200,000 investment.
Yeah. It's GMF is a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's about that.
Is the math that easy?
It is.
Come on. Yep. So, I mean, because that's what I was wondering. It's like, okay, if a piece of farmland on which you grow lettuce might sell for, $25,000 an acre or something, that's 3 acres, $75,000 versus a $200,000 box. Like, how does the ROI work?
The ROI with the gourmet mushroom farm is usually under 2 years.
Wow.
We do have clients that are in islands, Pacific, Atlantic, that it's months, way less than a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of astounding, the math.
Yeah.
How come we're not seeing farm boxes like everywhere now?
I think there's an education that comes with it, and we're not the solution. There's going to be a lot of people that need to create these ideas to change the food that we look at, what we're growing, how we're growing it, what we're putting into our bodies. So we're just a small part of it, but it is an education that's needed.
Yeah, I don't kind of buy that. Like, when something's that good and the ROI is that simple, what are we missing? Is it just that this conversation, if we were having it in another year or another 2 years, I wouldn't be asking that question?
I think it might take time. I think there's some industries that we're not quite in yet that will be easy to scale. When we started, we were working primarily with hospitals, grocers, and we didn't have the gourmet mushroom farm yet. It was the vertical hydroponic farm. There is an ROI on the vertical hydroponic farm. It's a little bit longer. So I think some of the other industries that we're getting into are scalable a lot faster.
Do you think that okay, so you use the mushroom farm with a really fast ROI. Do you think that sort of gets you on the map, gets you noticed, and then others that are a little more patient, you know, you're nodding?
Definitely. Yeah. I think the GMF, it's the product that we engineered. It was the second product that we engineered. And when we did it, nobody was doing it. Since then, there's been a few companies that have done something similar, but not at scale.
So are you, you know, here's what comes to mind to me. If the ROI is so great, it's almost like, I'm going to draw a bad parallel, but well, maybe it's a play on words because I'm thinking of pot and mushrooms. Mm-hmm. But so listeners, forgive me for that. But like you think it like pot was like a gold rush when it went legal and everybody kind of swarmed to it, drove down the price, drove the competition was terrible and a bunch of people went out of business. I mean, if enough people grow gourmet mushrooms fast enough, like it takes the fun out of it for the early guys, right?
Well, I mean, there's 8 billion people walking around yeah. on the planet.
So you're saying we can grow a lot more mushrooms and still be yeah. okay?
And I think we're just scratching the surface on all the mushrooms and what they do. And this is non-psychedelics.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
there's all kinds of companies that are doing all kinds of things with mushrooms outside of actually just growing them to eat.
Yeah, like coffee, putting mm-hmm. it as an ingredient in different things. So yeah, I could see that.
Yep.
All right. So a cost, I mentioned $200,000. Is that roughly?
That's about an yeah. average project for us. We look at projects because mm-hmm. we're doing the permitting and the pre-construction and the support after. So it's a long-term relationship. It's about $250,000 mm-hmm. for a project and up.
Wow. And it's not just like, I picture, you know, you open up the door and there's these three rows of vertical, stanchions essentially mm-hmm. full of plants, but there's a lot more that goes into it, right? There's tech, there's, you know, the rest of it. So talk about the rest of what goes into a farm box to make it functionally effective.
Sure. So you have all the electrical, the plumbing, there's a lot of custom manufacturing that happens with our products. The GMF, for instance, there's three rooms and each room is like a lab. It's a clean room.
Rooms within the big box.
Yeah. So the first room you're mixing the substrate, then you're inoculating it. It goes to a fruiting chamber where the mushrooms actually grow out of these bags that have substrate. And each room has a different temperature and climate control. So there's a like an industrial HVAC system inside of it. The vertical hydroponic farm is just one room. There's a ceiling tray area when you walk in, and then you have the walls. But there's tanks where the water gets refiltered and goes back, you know, through the walls. The software that we use right now is a company that works with a lot of companies like us, Agrotech. We're also working with Siemens International on software as well.
Hmm.
So there is a software play. There is a tech play, I think, on the data side.
Well, could I, not having any experience growing anything, could I buy one, you give me a handful of seeds, and I go pop, 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 put them all in and let the system do its thing?
Absolutely.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that easy?
Yeah. It's something that we educate you on. So we do a training while your product's getting built and manufactured. We fly a team out to deploy it and set it up. We fly a team out to train you. And then there's ongoing support. So we have a lot of clients that have never grown anything.
Wow.
They didn't know what this was. They bought the product and they're up and running.
Huh. Are they making? Well, don't answer that question. Mm-hmm. I'm going to first thank sponsors and then I'm going to come back to you, find out like, are they doing okay? But first, listeners, reminding you, this is ProCo 360, named the best Colorado business podcast of the last 5 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Jake Savageau of FarmBox, and I want to thank our sponsors, Via Technologies. These guys are great hosting and tech and web marketing company. They keep the ProCo 360 website up and running and manage all the kinds of things I need them to do. Appreciate it, guys. Colorado Biz Magazine, and that magazine does a great job featuring Colorado companies. And in a recent issue is where the announcement was that ProCo 360 won Best Colorado Business Podcast for the fifth year. So thanks to them. Also Denver Ventures, and we partner with Denver Ventures to feature great Colorado companies. Hey, one more mention. I'm a CU buff and an alum, so I'm happy to partner with the Leeds Business School at CU Boulder to reach each other's audiences. They have a podcast called the Leeds Business Insights, where you get fresh insights from conversations with professors, alumni, and thought leaders. So check out the Leeds Business Insights on your favorite podcast platform. That's it for that. So back now to Jake. you said people who've never been in the business are buying farm boxes. You know, you're getting them up and they're getting running and
they're producing and they're making money.
Wow. I think of some of these like pop-up businesses and people jump in. Is this going to be like a franchise for you at some point? You're smiling. I don't know.
We have talked about that. We're not there yet, but, I would say more than half of our clients are not in agriculture and they are maybe retired and want to start another income, or they've been looking at it and want to get into it. So, and that would be individuals typically. Vertical markets in the private sector, businesses, hospitals, we still have to train them. They've never done this before. Yeah. So it's more than half.
Wow. So do you see that happening where, you know, a private institution, whether it's a university or a hospital or like that, they just want one of these on site to, or even like a restaurant that has multiple outlets, they want their own produce.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our first client was Centura and they put these behind some hospitals. Our second one was Natural Grocers.
Really? Natural Grocers is growing their own food in farm boxes and putting it out through the stores?
They were for a while. They're not doing that anymore.
Okay, why?
I don't know. I wish they would because they have a lot of stores.
Yeah.
But we have schools here. We've got Vail and Epic here in Colorado. We've got other schools outside of Colorado. They use this more as to teach these kids business, educate them, learn how to grow food. There's five or six platforms that they use this for, and the kids love it.
Wow.
We have a restaurant group here in Colorado that owns Edible Beets and some other restaurants.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's one right behind that location.
And so they're, again, growing their own produce and using it in there. And this boy, they can talk about locally grown, self-grown.
Yeah, and that farm runs awesome.
Wow.
They're doing really good. So they literally grow it, walk it into the kitchen, 30 steps and put it on the plate.
Are they doing that as a cost reduction, freshness, because it's good for marketing? Where do they tell you?
I think their number one was their ROI. And when I talked to Justin, the owner.
Justin's been on Proco 360. Yeah. Yeah.
So we talked about that. And then I think there's a PR play for them. You know, the restaurant that it's currently at is a vegan restaurant, but they supply all the restaurants with their produce.
And so the Edible Beets company owns a farm box and then its produce comes from, they've grown it themselves. Do they have to have a separate employee who manages
that? They do. They have somebody that runs that farm full time.
Well, you call it a farm.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if it's equivalent to 3 acres, sure. Yeah. I mean, does it require day-to-day attention, like all the time kind of thing?
It can, depending on what you're growing.
And how you're cycling product through, I would think.
Yeah, but some of those days may be an hour. Some of those days might be 6 hours. So an average farm is about 20 to 30 hours a week to run. And the GMF is kind of on the lower end. It's about 20 hours a week.
Wow, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so funding. I mean, you sell them now for roughly $250,000 basically installed, but any idea what it cost you to develop, you know, your prototype and get it to where you could actually sell it?
Yeah. If we did a P&L on that, it would probably be a lot more than what we initially talked about.
Yeah.
Our first of a kind with RK took about a year and a half, and it was a full-time thing. Our first of a kind took us about a year. We went through a bunch of different iterations, tested different lights and tubes and had a bunch of different ideas. But it's hard to put a price on your time because you're not getting it back.
if you're not getting paid at all.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So how long were you at this before you drew any revenue?
We were at it for about 2.5-3 years.
Wow.
The company's completely self-funded. You know, there's four partners. Rusty Walker is the CEO, and Rusty and I are the operating partners. We have two other partners, but we haven't taken any outside capital at all.
Wow. So that means you didn't pay yourselves or?
We paid the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Where'd that money come from? Are you guys all multiple entrepreneurs? And
Rusty has a logistics company and I have a couple other companies. And one of our partners in Texas is a former surgeon, retired and had some money. So yeah.
So you've all just pooled it and off you go. Now it's still not profitable, is it?
We'll be profitable this year.
Well, that's exciting, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. We tripled our gross revenue last year, about a month ago.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Although, when you say profitable, you're not talking about paying yourselves yet either.
Well, not paying ourselves back yet, but
You're paying yourselves now.
A little
bit. Okay, I get it. So, there are others doing this, I suppose. And, you know, the one thought I had is, okay, I went out to Amazon in preparation for this conversation. I'm like, okay, I could buy a little vertical hydroponic thing that would fit in the corner of my room for $150. So there's no comparison though, is there?
Well, there's comparison as you're growing the same produce, and it might be the same lighting or similar to, but the volume is much different. So this is a little bit more at scale.
So, I mean, I can't buy 1,000 of those things on Amazon, put them in a box and have the same result, can I?
Probably not.
No. What do you mean probably? It's a come on.
It'd be very difficult.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, you've built these to be highly efficient turnkey systems, right?
Correct.
And each one, like you could have 10 of them next to each other and you basically 1 times 10. They operate all individually.
Yes. Right. Okay, and we do have clients that have bought multiple units, and we'll put them together with a separate container where you have a hallway that you can walk through.
Okay.
And,
yeah. All right. Is there competition in your space? Like, are there other, companies doing basically what you're doing?
Yeah, there's a few. Freight Farms was probably the biggest one. They went bankrupt this year.
Is that good or bad for you?
It was actually really good. We actually looked at purchasing their company.
Oh, yeah.
They had raised, several rounds of pretty substantial capital, and it wasn't the right fit for us to purchase their assets. There's a couple other companies that do what we do. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of money that's been put into indoor ag and specifically these huge warehouses.
Yeah.
I think there's nobody doing that at scale with mushrooms, and that's where the profit is.
Why is the profit so much greater with mushrooms than with lettuce and radishes and strawberries?
I think the market bears the price, and you can charge a lot for mushrooms, specifically specialized mushrooms.
Yeah.
Gourmet mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. They're just worth more to the buyers.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's So what does that mean? Does that mean you expect to sell like a bunch more mushroom products until what? I mean, if the ROI on a mushroom box is 2 years, what is it on a vegetable box?
Yeah, it can be less than 2 years depending on where it's going, but the vertical hydroponic farm is maybe 30 or 40% longer than that.
Well, that's not bad.
It's not bad. There's still a fast ROI.
You need lettuce, you need strawberries and all the things that you grow in it. So yep. I guess it really depends on if somebody's in business for what their purpose is. If they're really in business, like to make money and that's it, then they're going to get into the mushroom world. But if they want to grow produce, the ROI is still great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. And how long is this equipment going to last? Because it's subjected to power, light, water, dirt, all the like.
Yeah, there are things that wear out. We have a critical parts kit with everything that can be replaced pretty easy in the short term. We're expecting several decades.
Well, for the box.
Yeah, right? And everything, and most of the hardware that's in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool then.
Yep.
So, I mean, once you start, you just keep going, and that's that.
Yeah.
Huh, that's pretty cool. All right. Are you selling all that you can make right now?
Well, I think we're just about to scale. So
what's that mean?
Well, we've got some pretty cool things happening with different partnerships. We have a contract with the federal prison system in Florida, and we have a contract with NASA. So those are a few that we're working with, on the federal side, and in the private sector, there's some clients that I think will help us scale as well.
Prisons, that's pretty interesting, because I would think that they'd want their inmates to manage these systems.
Absolutely.
It's job training. It's all kind of right. And it's probably going to save them money and provide healthier food.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's that. What about NASA? Can you run these in space? Can you put one on the moon?
That's what they're trying to do.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. They may not be putting a container, but the technology that's inside of it. So we're under contract with them to build kind of a very bespoke product. And it's one of 6 phases.
So the idea is that you will help NASA engineer a farm for space, kind of like on the Martian, except you'll have better fertilizer than they used in that movie, right?
Yep.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So these things, are they going to shift the way people think? I would think that they'll shift the way people think about even using these contained farms.
Sure. I mean, there needs to be some sort of paradigm shift. We've been doing whatever it is for X amount of time.
Yeah.
Eventually, innovators come and do things different, and it takes time for people to accept that. But it also has to work on a financial model.
Yeah, I would think, look, some things take longer to accept than others as new because they really require a change of behavior. It doesn't seem like farming hydroponically is a big leap of, I mean, you're still farming just the way you used to in a different form factor, but it's like, it's still the same and it's pretty easy to understand.
Sure.
Like, why the delay?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, some of the clients that we're working with, like specifically Catholic charities where the ROI doesn't matter, those are very scalable because their ROI is putting this behind a church in the south side of Chicago or wherever it's going to go and keeping kids out of a gang and teaching them to have value. So that is a big part of who we are and what we do, very mission driven. And I think as we expand on that, there's a lot of growth.
You know, I'm still thinking about the economics, and I guess where I'm starting to think is that, okay, the economics, if you're producing food, it's pretty easy to do the ROI, pretty easy to do this. It's just if you're a chain of grocery stores and you're just buying it from a distributor with no capital investment, there's a stick there that says stickiness that says, I don't have to spend, you know, to scale of any significance. I don't have to buy 100 of these at whatever that would be, $25 million. I can just keep buying it.
Yep.
But these companies are pretty big. You'd think that to spend $25 million bucks for growing their own stuff easily seemed like it'd be a pretty easy equation.
Yeah, there. I mean,
or whatever that number. Yeah,
I think we're working on a fund for a leasing option. So the leasing option, there won't be that initial investment. So that'll open up a lot of institutions to do this at scale. That is going to happen.
Yeah, and I could see even with, you know, smaller like restaurants where they might not want to come up with $250,000, but they could pay $10,000 a month or whatever. It's worth it for them.
Absolutely.
I just ran with this. I don't know those numbers. Yeah. But, you know,
it's less than that. And there's an actual ROI for the client with a leasing
right
model.
Away.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And they're not having to fund, you know, $250,000 project. And if they want to do it at scale, we can do that.
Nice. Because you've got deep enough pockets to be able to fund these.
We don't, but our fund will.
I see.
Yeah, our partners will.
Ah, so the fund is basically will pay Farmbox to build a bunch of these and then turn it into a leasing model business.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you keep the velocity of sales going regardless of how much capital companies have to apply.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. All right. I saw something that was kind of intriguing on your website about how you're now like trying to, I hope it worked, but you were going to grow a bunch of spruce trees.
Mm-hmm.
Did that work?
Yeah, we did a bunch of tests and R&D. We partnered with Core Electric. And the idea behind that was to plant trees where they're, you know, cutting them down or there's fires, reforestation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's still ongoing. It's a partnership that's probably going to be years long.
It's cool. I saw a picture. Listeners, like, you should go to the Farmbox website. It's farmboxfoods.com.
Farmboxfoods.com.
Yeah. Go to the website. It's kind of cool. You see all these like little spruce trees sticking out of the holes and like, wow, where you would have seen lettuce, there's spruce trees. It's cool.
Yeah, they take a little bit longer to grow.
I would think, well, spruce trees, but I'm wondering in that environment, can you optimally fertilize and do things? Because spruce trees, like as an example, are notoriously slow growers. Can you speed it up to where they're ready to plant much faster?
We did. We sped it up and we actually, I think, just had a planting experiment. So we're going to see how they
because you got to see how they do in the wild. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. All right. So you've gotten some recognition. It's cool. You're being recognized as a finalist by the Colorado Chamber of Commerce as one of the coolest things made in Colorado. And that's tomorrow night. By the time listeners, you hear this, you'll know if you won.
Yeah.
So that's cool. But how does recognition, these kinds of what you're doing sort of, I think, creates like a gravitational pull of interest around what you're doing. So how is that working for you?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's not me. You know, we have an amazing team and I have amazing partners and, you know, the culture is much different than other companies that I'm involved with. And I think that, you know, again, these things take time. You know, we've been at this 8 years.
Gee.
So, but it was a slow go because we didn't take on capital. And, you know, if you look at one of our competitors that took on $58 million, we could have sped it up, but we wouldn't have owned the company. We wouldn't have owned the culture.
And they went bankrupt.
Bankrupt.
Why with 50 some million dollars would they go? Well, they probably had a lot of factors, obviously. But I mean, what do you think you're doing right that they didn't do right and they went bankrupt?
Yeah, I think the culture and the quality of the product and the relationship with our clients, we want to make sure that we own the relationship. That's a long-term relationship. And I think that they were really targeting federal and government grants. When all of that went away, they didn't really have a sales organization.
Huh.
So now we're starting to get those sales because they're gone. And now we're starting to kind of navigate and being strategic about how we go after
it. It sounds like your approach to selling, though, is to people who see the value. For whatever reason, whether it's a philanthropic organization or it's a business organization that needs an ROI, you're basically not in a big hurry. You want to sell to people who see value.
Sure.
That seems like a more sustainable way to grow.
Yeah. I mean, we tried to scale the right way, but also without any capital doing this, it took time to build our first of a kind and then at scale with our manufacturer. But
there's risk associated with that too, because it doesn't take, you know, I mean, somebody could look and say, hey, that's a great idea. Let's get out there. Let's get there faster. Let's raise $50 million. And we don't have to worry about the grants, but let's just do what they're doing faster.
Yeah, 100%.
So does that worry you?
I think it's different when you have skin in the game. You know, I think you move at a certain pace. You have to be patient. But now we're moving a little bit faster and doing things a little bit
differently. Does the momentum seems like what I'm hearing from you is the momentum has shifted. The momentum is increasing and things are starting to, that flywheel starting to move.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Are people contacting you now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that start happening and how was that? How did that feel?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have our SEO and SEM and our marketing, but we do get quite a few calls. A lot of them are international.
Hmm.
So it's hard to navigate that because we don't have a lot of farms international. We're mostly in North America. We've got some in some islands in the Caribbean and some other areas, but we're trying to figure out what that looks like if we deploy a farm halfway around the world and how are we going to support that?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of time that goes in on the back end of supporting the client.
Yeah, I would think, you mentioned islands in the Caribbean, I would think like, what a perfect application. You know, how hard is it to, you know, to some of these tourist areas and all that to have fresh fruit, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables like that don't grow there natively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We deployed a farm in Tahiti and that farm had an ROI of several months.
Wow.
So, because you think they're flying everything in, it's very expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's another thing with the client, whatever they're buying is finding that offtake partner.
Mm-hmm.
If the client already is the offtake partner, it's easy. But if they're buying it as a business, they got to find it. It takes time.
That makes it offtake partner, meaning the one who actually uses the produce. Got it. Yeah, yeah. Now, excuse me, catch that, please. You're Colorado based, and has that helped? I mean, Colorado's not, I mean, we do have farms and things in Colorado, but you know, what's that feel like being based here?
Well, I'm from Colorado and you know, a lot of the people that work with us and work for us and our partners are, so we're proud. We're proud to be in Colorado. We have a lot of support from all these organizations like South Metro, Denver Chamber of Commerce that we work with. So it's been great. I don't know if there'd be any benefit of us being on the East Coast or West Coast or anywhere else.
Yeah. When you think about the future, like how soon are we going to be seeing Farmbox branded? Like wherever we go, like we'll be driving down the road, there's a parking lot, there's a Farmbox. Like,
I hope it happens tomorrow.
But I mean, what do you think? Is that like a 10-year deal?
I think it would be over the next decade. You know, I think again, we're not the only solution. There's a bunch of really good ideas, but they got to be executed the right way.
Yeah, yeah. Yours is reliable now.
Correct.
Delivers ROI today.
Yep.
So that's an advantage, right?
Absolutely.
So it's been a big journey. You said 8 years so far. What do you wish you'd known then that you learned along the way?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Rusty, when he came on, I learned how to be patient. And when we first started, I wasn't very patient. So made some mistakes that cost some money and time. I think patience is hard to learn. So that's probably one of the things I wish I would have known back then.
Like patience around what?
You know, just timing is critical. Making the right decisions. You have to be patient. You know,
give me an example, because you're being vague and I see you smiling. So tell me, give me an example.
Hiring somebody when you haven't vetted them because you need them, rather than taking the time to vet and then hire the right person.
You've done that.
Yeah. And then it requires a sense of knowing when to put time into that person or those people. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but a lot of management capital goes into that.
Yeah. That's a tough one too. It's really a tough one. It's so tempting when you're hurting and you need talent, you need somebody. It's so tempting to like look at a resume and take the person.
Yeah.
That's usually wrong.
So you're making decisions emotionally.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes that's not good.
Especially if the emotion is I need help now.
Yeah.
That's a bad emotion.
Yeah.
What do you see as your biggest challenge, like the next year or two?
I see our biggest challenge as in raising capital, which we're currently doing, and finding the right capital partner that understands where we could go if we had the right resources and capital, and then filling some spots on the team at an executive level of scale.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that I think we are looking at right now.
At this point, you're barely profitable and you want to hire some really strong talent, it sounds like. Are you trying to hire people that you pay, or are you trying to hire people that are going to be equity partners that don't need the money yet?
I think it could be both.
Yeah.
We have had some fractional people come on and do different things. It typically doesn't work out, but they didn't have equity either.
Yeah.
So if somebody was the right fit, we would definitely entertain that.
Okay. Last question. Actually, before I go to the last question, I'm going to ask you this question. I'm sitting across from Jake. He's a pretty built guy. So how do you, you're still working out a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah. How do you balance like your personal life while you're trying to build this company? Cause I'm looking at you and you're not just trying to work out. You're probably spending some time at it. So how do you balance your personal life?
I just try to be disciplined with time and time management. And I've been doing it for, I've been lifting and training for 35 years. So it's just
a
routine. It has to happen.
Yeah. I get it. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. If somebody wanted to get into business the way you have, start a sort of a new approach to traditional product or service, like now that you know, what advice would you give them?
I'd find somebody that is much smarter than you that knows that industry, because when we got into it, we didn't know anything about it. So that's another reason why it took a long time. We had to kind of figure it out. We jumped off a cliff without a parachute. So finding people that have that skill set in whatever industry, I think is pretty important.
So, all right, I was going to end, but I'm not going to yet, because you I should have asked you this at the very beginning, but here we are. What made you see an opportunity that you knew nothing about?
Sure. Well, we were originally going to build a development of shipping container houses, and the International Building Code would have taken 3 or 4 years. So Tony was the original co-founder, and myself, his daughter was going to high school at Mountain Vista High School. We toured a farm that the STEM teacher had been involved with a grant to get. It was a freight farm. And within a week, we had a warehouse and a farm. A container, and we hired Jason Brown, who's still with us. He fabricated, manufactured our first one. So when we walked into it, we thought we could do it, and we thought there was a market for it. And we kind of figured it out as we went along.
Yeah. I mean, it's I'm sure the nuances and the complications are tricky, but the concept is not difficult, is it?
No.
Wow. That's cool. All right. Yeah. I'm going to wrap on that. Was it that simple though? You were going to build modular houses, and you instead saw like the light bulb came on. That was it.
Yeah.
Wow. Who thought you were crazy?
I mean, a lot of people.
Yeah.
But some of those people are with us now, so it's all good.
Hey listeners, Jake and I continue to talk at the end of this interview. So after the wrap up, stick around and you'll hear what we talked about, which is really pretty interesting. Stick around. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Jake Savageau of FarmBox. Jake, what a fun conversation. What an amazing, amazing product.
Thanks for having
me, Dave. It's
going
to be fun to watch this ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to start seeing them all over. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360. where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the Proco 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you follow Proco 360 and submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors, Via Technologies, Denver Ventures, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show, Live, Work, Love, Colorado. I told you the mistakes would be mine.
It's all good, man.
Cool.
I thought it was awesome.
It's amazing. I can't believe that, you know, someone can, especially like a second income, mm-hmm. could either self-finance or lease at some point.
Yep.
A $250,000 investment, it becomes a business and pays for itself in what, 2 to 3 years
at yeah, most? Yeah, the GMF is usually under 2 years, like a year and a half. Yeah, it's really fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The issue that we have really is with certain clients finding the offtake partners.
Mm.
So I think—
Meaning they have to sell the produce they make.
They got to build a business and they may have never owned a business or they don't understand how to run a business. Yeah.
So growing it's not the hard part.
No, that's not the hard part. Uh-huh. Yeah, if you're a profit-driven model.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about doing is actually just becoming a full circle. You know, we're owning the product. We're off-taking it to the Costcos of the world. And that's some of the capital partners that we're talking to. We had Michael who owns Green Pro. I can't remember what it is. They basically own all these shops where you can buy lighting and things for cannabis, but they're an IPO, you know, he's built a bunch of businesses, East Coast guy. So mm-hmm. he reached out to us. I think Rusty and I might be meeting with him this week.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to some family offices.
Mm.
So yeah, I think what we really need is the right capital partner, and we've had offers, but it wasn't the right partner.
Yeah.
I'm glad we didn't do that.
Huh.
So if we have the right capital partner where we can build inventory ahead of time, and then increase our sales a little bit, we'll be off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, if you could, whether it's Costco or anybody, mm-hmm. essentially contract for a certain amount of produce.
100%.
Then, you know, then you're going.
Yeah.
I mean, and whether you then contract it from the people who buy these or lease these, or you just have your own, I mean, you have lots of choices then.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then with everything going on with psychedelics, there's a huge play for mm-hmm. the right partner.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that looks like, but I know there's interest in it.
Hmm.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Is all that private that you just told me?
I mean, you could put it on. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, okay. We'll see.
Yeah. Or you can share it with anybody. You know, the psychedelics is interesting because there's a lot of research, and it's not just mushrooms, but mushrooms specifically around, you know, dementia and you know,
PTSD stuff and
head injuries. And I think that we're kind of just starting to understand it. That's going to be a shift where people have to kind of say, all right, well, we're pumping pharmaceuticals into our body, but there's all these other solutions.
Yeah.
But it needs to be tested. And
sure.
I don't know what it looks like on a federal level.
But you could have FDA approved farm boxes.
100%.
I mean, FDA controlled farm box production.
Yeah. And you could be an offtake partner for that.
Wow.
Huh. And that's a different level.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah. And then the fodder is interesting, you know, because we have a lot of interest in Brazil.
Hmm.
We've had some interest in some areas outside of the U.S. It hasn't really blown up here in the U.S., but we've only built a few of those. But we tested it. It grows 900 pounds of fodder a day.
Oh.
It's and pretty crazy.
That's food for cattle,
365.
Basically.
Yeah. It's a
livestock.
Really cool product.
Wow.
And
that basically usually grows on these massive fields, mm-hmm. huge fields.
Yeah. But you've got weather, you've got the cost. There's all these things. So it's not like, what's the ROI? It's like, let's protect our investment, which mm-hmm. is our head of cattle, horses.
Yeah.
You can feed it to a lot of different animals.
Mm, that's cool.
Yeah. We talked to some Wagyu beef farmers.
Mm.
They're very interested. There's a family office that we're talking to with them. So, you know, it's one of those things where we just have to have the right partner to come in so we can scale this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap up.